from deep inside your radio.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'm abashed to admit that I let 2 weeks go by, just totally letting it slip my mind that this broadcast had just celebrated its 28th anniversary on the air. So I didn't forget to say that this week. Now I'm unabashed. I have only one thing to add to the discussion of the passing of Christopher Hitchens this week. I had the opportunity or the obligation to debate him once on national television on Bill Maher's show about the Iraq War. He was wrong. And I just have to say that he had the gift, not unique but unusual, of when he argued against you using the full powers of his intellect as a scalpel rather than as a hammer. So, R.I.P. to him. Ladies and gentlemen, our last American troops, aside from the 16,000 private contractors that are going to stay. Did they mention that on TV? Our last American troops crossed into Kuwait. We invaded Kuwait today, ending the Iraq War, supposedly. So our long national cakewalk is over. And, of course, it lasted that long, apparently, because someone left the cake out in the rain. I'm not a big fan of jokes. That is to say, I'm a joke enjoyer at times. I have a friend in L.A. who tells me at least two or three every time I see him. And they're always good. And besides, I get something free for laughing. No, they are good. They're good jokes, Nick. They are, really are. But I don't remember them. I don't remember jokes. I don't recall or retain jokes, except for three really scabrous ones, which I will not be telling you today. Because it's a holiday season. This is not the Christmas show, by the way. The Christmas show is next week on most of these stations. I used to hear people say that on the radio all the time, and now I got to say it. Anyway, but there is, I think, the great good news, bad news joke of the week. Definitely applies to basketball player, NBA player, Chris Paul. The good news, you're going to Los Angeles. The bad news, you're playing for the Clippers. Nothing beats that one in my book, and I didn't write the book. Now, I have noticed for a long time the tendency of certain Republican spokespeople to, when the subject comes up of corporate income taxes, to make this case. Well, corporations don't pay taxes. They just pass them along to customers in the form of higher prices. And they think that that's the end of the conversation. And very often it is. Until you realize, okay, what do individuals do if their taxes go up? They spend less, probably, unless they're really dumb. And if they spend less, the people with whom they were spending money get less income. So if they spend less, they've passed along their taxes to the people they used to buy stuff from. And the people who they buy stuff from, it's like another tax onto them. And so if you follow that chain philosophy out far enough, you realize the happy news that nobody in this country pays taxes. We're all just passing it along, except for the people who don't pay taxes. They're stuck with that. Yes, it really is that absurd. Hello, welcome to the show.
This Christmas, and there's a trim up tree. How much fun it's gonna be together. This Christmas, fireside's blazing bright. We're caroling through the night. And this Christmas will be a very special Christmas. We'll be right back.
from the very edge of Lake Pontchartrain in New Orleans, Louisiana. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. From the buried lead department, speaking of our long national cakewalk drawing to an end, this from the Washington Post, a story about the ceremony, the commemoration, the thing, a simple ceremony held on the edge of Baghdad's international airport, in which it's called an end-of-mission ceremony. Not a mission accomplished ceremony, just an end-of-mission ceremony by the Army where they folded the flag and said, you know, we're out of here. But that's not the lead. That was the lead, sorry. But the real lead story, the buried lead, the one that kind of tells you all you need to know, was way down in paragraph 4. You see, this is a military ceremony. Vague declarations of success, warnings of challenges ahead, brass band playing, the flag is folded. But now you get to paragraph 4, the money paragraph. No senior Iraqi government officials showed up for the event, though the name tags attached to two chairs in the front row indicated American hopes that they might. One was labeled for Prime Minister Maliki, the other for President Talabani. What more do you need to know? They love us. Ladies and gentlemen, was it fraud at the heart of the new F-bomb, the foreclosure crisis, and the mess that began in 2008? Well, Sinder Nimella, a management guru who'd worked for Boeing and other big employers, went to work for Countrywide Mortgage. You've heard of them. They were big in the subprime business. She took a survey of Countrywide employees when she went to work there. Along with their answers to the survey questions, some employees used the comments section to complain about unethical practices. This is in 2006. Quote, there is so much fraud being committed between loan brokering, document alteration, overstating borrowers' length of employment and actual income, one employee wrote. No one was held accountable, the worker said, because the company continued to, quote, look the other way, unquote. Countrywide now owned by Bank of America, Bank of Opportunity. Another employee who raised concerns about improper lending pronounced that, quote, there will be a reckoning. They know it's a slow poison, like the cigarette industry, but they sell them anyway. He raised the specter of, quote, super funds to undo the damage. After reading many similar comments, Nimella says, she urged Countrywide executives to open a full-scale investigation of fraud within the company. The investigation never happened, she says. They just shut the whole thing down. They didn't want to hear that. Lighting the fuse on the new F-bomb. The bombs have fuses, and now, nice people doing nice things. News of News Corp. The News of the World, the tabloid newspaper formerly owned by...
Ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, be quiet. The tabloid newspaper formerly owned by Rupert Murdoch's Nice Corporation, News of the World, paid $200,000 to the fund supporting the search for missing youngster Madeleine McCann as part of an apology for publishing her mom's diaries on condition that the term of the deal remained secret.
I'd hate to call you a liar, but I don't believe you.
Well, it's in the papers. And not yours, sir. The payment was made after the missing girl's parents expressed their outrage at the story, which Kate McCann, the mother, said made her feel, quote, mentally raped, unquote. All the parties involved in the negotiations over the payment, which was agreed to in September 2008, were asked to sign a confidentiality agreement, hiding the scale of the newspaper's culpability. But wait, there's more. That's not the only payoff announced this week. There's also this one. The former Labor Cabinet Minister, Culture Minister, Tessa Jowell, accepted a $310,000 settlement from Nice Corp over the hacking of her phone. Her lawyers confirmed this week that News International subsidiary News Group, which used to publish News of the World, was paying. Another condition agreed with Nice Corp is that she will be given all of the documents relating to the phone hacking accusations. She's insisted that she would disclose full details of the settlement. No confidentiality there. Jowell was told by police that her mobile phone was hacked, quote, wholesale by the News of the World, with officers from Scotland Yard telling her that her phone was targeted very extensively during a time that her estranged husband was being investigated for his links to Silvio Berlusconi. Wholesale. Well, you know, they're smart people. Why would they hack? Why would they do anything retail? You see what I'm saying? But there's more about Nice Corp, because it is, after all, so very nice. I said, it is, after all, so very nice. There you go. You gotta have nice music for nice people doing nice things. The police investigation into computer hacking on behalf of newspapers is questioning nearly 20 machines, computers seized from private investigators and other individuals, suggesting that hundreds of individuals' computers were targeted. So this would be computer hacking as well as phone hacking. They're versatile, ladies and gentlemen. They're not just nice, they're versatile. It's one way of putting it. A small Scotland Yard team of 8 detectives and support staff is examining an archive of hundreds of thousands of messages and documents from the machines, with suggestions that the number of victims of computer hacking could eventually rival the total targeted in phone hacking. Now, this is not just Nice Corp's newspapers doing this, according to the Independent newspaper. It could be other newspapers as well. So there's about 16 computers being looked at right now. And, though it should have been in the apologies of the week, but it was too nice to put there. James Murdoch, the son of Rupert Murdoch, has apologized to a committee of parliament after the emergence of emails about a court case from 2008. These cases involve a football player, soccer player, we'd call him Gordon Taylor. And the email trail says that Taylor, the chief of the football players' union, wants to demonstrate that what happened to him, phone hacking, was, quote, rife throughout the organization. That was in a chain of emails sent to James Murdoch. In a letter to members of parliament, Murdoch says he was confident that the reason he kept testifying that it was just a rogue reporter responsible for phone hacking was that he didn't read the full email chain.
Here it is!
No. that would be you're saying the wrong thing. But that's okay, too.
I'm sorry.
Well, that's all right, Rupert. I knew you'd be there eventually. This was, says Murdoch, given the timing of my response, just over 2 minutes after the email chain was sent to me and the fact that I typically received emails on my BlackBerry on weekends. So, you see, he's blaming his BlackBerry. Which, you know, kick him while they're down. Having agreed to meet the following Tuesday, I would have relied on the oral briefing that I previously described in my testimony before the committee. I would also like, he says, to take the opportunity to reaffirm my past testimony that I was not aware of any evidence that pointed to widespread wrongdoing or indicated that further investigation was necessary. I apologize. This has only now come to light, and that is being brought to the committee at this late stage of your inquiry. After the cover-up was... I didn't even read this before I signed it, he said. No, he didn't say that. News of Nice Corp, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to copyright it. Why wouldn't I? Now, news of the godly. Thousands of children, because, you know, it's not just the Irish, it's not just the Americans, it's not just the British, it's the Dutch. Thousands of children suffered sexual abuse in Dutch Catholic institutions over the past 65 years. Church officials knew about the abuse, but didn't read the whole email. But failed to stop it or help victims because they feared setting off scandals. This is according to a long-awaited report released this week. The report estimated that 1 in 10 Dutch children suffered some form of sexual abuse more broadly in society, not just in the church. Hence the wooden shoes. The findings detailed some of the most widespread abuse yet linked to the Catholic Church. The Dutch probe prompted the Archbishop of Utrecht to apologize to victims on behalf of the entire Dutch Catholic organization, saying the report fills us, quote, with shame and sorrow. Unquote. The abuse ranged from unwanted sexual advances to rape, the report said. Abusers numbered in the hundreds at least and included priests, brothers, pastors, and lay people who worked in religious orders and congregations. Why do you think they call them? The number of abuse victims who spent some of their youth in church institutions lies somewhere between 10,000 and 20,000, according to the probe, which went back as far as 1945. The commission doing the investigation was set up last year under the leadership of a former government minister, Wim Dietman. Gotta love the Dutch names, who said there could be no doubt church leaders knew of the problem. But if they didn't read the whole email, I don't understand why. Oh, I see. That's somebody else's excuse. All right. News of the godly, ladies and gentlemen. Indeed. Copyrighted feature of this very broadcast. And we move quickly, therefore, to the very next part of the program, which features our friend, Addy the Atom. Eddie, what's your favorite excuse?
I didn't read the whole investigation report.
Okay, that's a good one. A recent announcement by the Fuke government has said in Japan has said residents checked for radiation caused by the nuclear accident after the March 11th quake and tsunami have, here's a nice adjective for you, alarming levels of exposure. That's a Gingrichian adjective, but this is from the Tokyo Times.
Fundamentally alarming
would be nude. The people who were examined came from the three municipalities closest to the crippled Fuke nuclear plant. The tests administered on almost 2,000 residents revealed these people were exposed to radiation levels at a maximum of 37 millisieverts for the 4 months following the crisis. The Japanese government sets a safe level at 1 millisievert. So that's only 37 times the safe maximum. The highest level of radiation found in 4 children was 5 millisieverts. That's almost 5 times the safe limit. Results of the local government at Fuke will continue to conduct health checks among its 2 million residents. Whole body counters and urine tests will measure internal radiation exposures. And results of the examination will be made public very soon and will be sent to examinees by mail, you see. No big rush. They're going to send the results of your radiation exams by mail, ladies and gentlemen. Deadland, Richland, Washington, the federal government says one-of-a-kind plant that will convert radioactive waste into a stable and storable substance that resembles glass, glass can't hurt you, will cost hundreds of millions of dollars more and may take longer to build. This is the Hanford Project, of course. In addition, several workers at the Hanford Nuclear Reservation have raised concerns about the safety of the plant's design and complained they've been retaliated against for voicing their issues. Turmoil has some in the Pacific Northwest uneasy about the plant's long-term viability, fearful that a frustrated Congress could balk at paying more money for a project long considered the cornerstone of cleanup at the highly contaminated site. And back to Fuke.
No.
Yes. Last April, about a month after the nuclear accident, concentrations of cesium-137 in the ocean near the plant peaked at, here's a number for you, 50 million times above normal levels, according to a study by Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute. Last May, Woods Hole senior scientist Ken Buesler said he tipped off Forbes that he was going to study the effects of radiation in the ocean. Buesler said two Japanese colleagues and he have just published the paper impacts of the Fuke accident in a journal, Environmental Science and Technology. Quote, the release of radioactivity from Fuke boasts that atmospheric fallout and direct discharges to the ocean represents the largest accidental release of radiation to the ocean in history. Unquote. But don't worry. Despite the alarming concentrations, the radiation rapidly diluted in the currents, the scientists contend, and they should pose little or no threat to human and marine life. However, little is known about the effect of radiation on the lowest levels of the coastal ecosystem. And I say, let's keep it that way.
Well, for once, we agree.
Addie, thank you. That's a holiday season. Why shouldn't we? News of clean, cheap, safe, too clean to be safe to be cheap. Our friend the Atom. And ladies and gentlemen, as I said, it's not the Christmas show. That's next week on most of these stations. But it is time with the welter of debates among candidates in the Republican race for the presidential nomination this year to hear what at least two of them on this broadcast will have to say apropos the holiday season. First, let's hear from Newt Gingrich.
Diamonds and diadems under the tree, gifted by someone, maybe by me. Not too expensive, but surely not free. It's a Tiffany's Christmas again. Oh, bracelets and watches, you'll surely be stunned. Sparklers like these, they just can't be shunned. Paid for, of course, with a revolving fund. It's a Tiffany's Christmas again. At this time of year, Fifth Avenue calls. You can also shop at fine upscale malls. Might seem extravagant, in the long run it's cheap. To make sure the missus does not make a peep. Oh, precious and semi, all fabulous gems. Far better than roses, no thorns, no stems. Don't need to know sizes, don't need to know hems. It's a Tiffany's Christmas again and again. It's a Tiffany's Christmas again and again and again and again. Merry Christmas.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
And here they are. First, from Chris Matthews at MSNBC.
We're back during the 11 a.m. hour on MSNBC today. We reported on a blog item that compared a phrase used by the Romney campaign to one used by the KKK way back in the 1920s. It was irresponsible and incendiary of us to do this, and it showed an appalling lack of judgment. We apologize, we really do, to the Romney campaign.
And it's pronounced incendiary. Deadline Washington. The Marine Corps this week apologized for mistakenly mailing Purple Heart Christmas tree ornaments to about 1,100 deceased Marines and sailors. Support the troops, won't you? The gold ornaments with an image of the Purple Heart in the center were part of a package from the Marine Corps Wounded Warrior Regiment that included a letter to the deceased recipient from the regiment's commanding officer, as well as a flyer with information about an athletic reconditioning program. The packages were addressed to the deceased troops. Of course, it had learned of the error when family members called. As, you know, they might. A spokeswoman for the regiment said in an interview that by Tuesday, 35 families who received the packages had called to point out the error. She said the commander had begun calling them to apologize. Letters of apologies will be sent to all families of the deceased who were included in the mailing. And don't address the apologies to the deceased, would be my recommendation, because those won't be opened. Dateline Newark, New Jersey, broadcast a Verizon emergency alert that the company texted to its wireless customers, jangled nerves, and triggered hundreds of calls from concerned residents to local and state offices. This is in New Jersey. The company sent the alert to customers in Middlesex, Monmouth, and Ocean counties, warning of a, quote, civil emergency, and telling people to take shelter now. The message was meant to be a test, but it wasn't labeled as such, Verizon admitted. In an email, a Verizon spokesman said the company apologized for any inconvenience or concern the message caused. The company didn't say why the message was sent without being labeled as a test, or whether this was the first time such a mistake had occurred. But why should they? They're Verizon. Embattled Nuclear Regulatory Commission Chairman Gregory Jaczko has apologized for the internal squabbles pitting him against his fellow commissioners, and he pledges to soothe relations. This according to White House Chief of Staff Bill Daley. Daley said he believes that the feuding can be worked out and does not impede the safety of the nation's nuclear reactors. Nothing can, according to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. Certainly not leaks. Admitting the failure of the Phobos Grunt mission, a Russian scientist apologized for the failed mission to the Mars moon of Phobos, but said that a new mission to the moon is still possible. Adding to the country's list of space bungles, a Russian spacecraft designed to collect rock and dust samples from the Martian moon flew off course just minutes after being launched. "We are deeply sorry about the failure," wrote the scientist. Lev Zeleny, adding that, quote, "we hope in the future to continue our collaboration on space science projects." He addressed that letter to the moon. Deadline Springfield, Illinois. At least two victims of sexual abuse by leaders in the Roman Catholic Church, that never happens, were among roughly 60 people who attended a repentance and prayer ceremony at the Cathedral of the Immaculate Conception this week. The ceremony, the initiative of Bishop Thomas John Paprocki, was for anyone abused by the church, as well as anyone who might have been hurt in other ways by someone in the church, he said. The purpose of the service was to repent for the past sins of members of the church so the church could move forward with a clean slate. "We must cleanse our historical conscience," he said. Sitting in the front row was Matthew McCormick, one of several people who received settlements from the church for sexual abuse committed by the Reverend Alvin Campbell. Campbell was a priest at St. Maurice Parish, pleaded guilty in 1985, but mentally ill to molestation charges. He was sentenced to 14 years in prison and died in 2002. McCormick said he was glad to see the church hold a repentance ceremony, but he still feels the Catholic Church hasn't accepted total responsibility for its actions. And allegations that Hawaii Five-O filming was disrespectful to a group of 24 Pearl Harbor survivors Friday at the National Memorial Cemetery of the Pacific at Punch Bowl in Hawaii prompted 5-0 executive producer Peter Lenkoff to apologize to veterans that it may have offended. Quote, "We recognize the privilege of filming in Hawaii. We're acutely aware of the deserved respect for its culture, history, and the reverence that should be afforded to all of our veterans, particularly those who served so nobly in Hawaii and at Pearl Harbor," he said in an email statement. Officials have acknowledged that while both 5-0 and the veterans group, the Greatest Generation Foundation, were scheduled to use the cemetery in separate areas, their paths did cross. A board member of the veterans group had complained the veterans were rushed along by the 5-0 production crew. But hey, it's network TV, babe. Got a train to catch. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
In the silence born here.
This is Le Show, and now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the warm, won't you?
Soft, listen to the warm.
The award-winning Listen to the Warm. News of the Warm. Northern soils will release a huge amount of carbon in a warmer world, says Edward Schur and the Permafrost Carbon Network. Arctic temperatures are rising fast and permafrost is thawing. Carbon released into the atmosphere from permafrost soils will accelerate climate change. The magnitude of this effect remains highly uncertain. The collective estimate is that carbon will be released more quickly than models suggest and at levels that are cause for serious concern. We, says Schur in this paper from the Nature magazine, we calculate that permafrost thaw will release the same order of magnitude of carbon as deforestation if current rates of deforestation continue. But because these emissions from permafrost include significant quantities of methane, the overall effect on climate could be 2.5 times larger than deforestation. And as if, to underline that prediction, comes this from the Independent newspaper in London, dramatic and unprecedented plumes of methane, that's a greenhouse gas 20 times more potent than carbon dioxide, have been seen bubbling to the surface of the Arctic by scientists undertaking an extensive survey of the region. So this is observed. This is not predicted now. The scale and volume of the methane release has astonished the head of the Russian research team who's been surveying the seabed of the East Siberian Arctic shelf for nearly 20 years. So you'd think he'd be hard to astonish. But he's a Russian. In an exclusive interview with the Independent, Igor Semeletov said that he has never before witnessed the scale and force of the methane being released from beneath the Arctic seabed. Quote, earlier we found torch-like structures like this, but they were only tens of meters in diameter. This is the first time we found continuous, powerful, and impressive seeping structures more than 1,000 meters in diameter. It's amazing, he said. I was most impressed by the sheer scale and high density of the plumes. Over a relatively small area, we found more than 100. Over a wider area, there should be thousands of them, unquote. Scientists estimate there are hundreds of millions of tons of methane locked away beneath the permafrost. And as we heard, there have all long been predictions of what happens when that permafrost melts. Now we're beginning to see it observed. Temperatures across the entire region are rapidly rising. They're already melting the Siberian permafrost, and now we're seeing the sudden release of the methane. Dr. Semeletov released his findings for the first time at the American Geophysical Union meeting in San Francisco. He refers to them as fountains or torch-like structures bubbling through the water column and injected directly into the atmosphere from the seabed. Well, that's efficient. An unusually hot melting season in 2010 accelerated ice loss in southern Greenland by 100 billion tons, and large portions of the island's bedrock rose an additional quarter of an inch in response. Yes, that's the finding from a network of nearly 50 GPS stations planted along the Greenland coast to measure the bedrock's natural response to the ever-diminishing weight of ice above it. You see, ice has great weight, and as there's less of it, the bedrock beneath it relaxes. A temperature spike in 2010 lifted the bedrock a detectably higher amount over a short 5-month period, higher than the routine uplift of 0.59 inches year after year. In a presentation at the American Geophysical Union meeting in San Francisco, Michael Bevis of Ohio State described the implications for climate change. Pulses of extra melting and uplift imply we'll experience pulses of extra sea level rise, he said. The process is not really a steady process, but the solid Earth is elastic. So, more bedrock rise to be predicted. And from the same meeting, amounts of warming previously thought to be safe may instead trigger widespread melting of the world's ice sheets and other catastrophic impacts, scientists said this week. Accelerating melting on the world's ice sheets and other new observations have scientists concluding that even a 2-degree Celsius rise in temperatures, that's a benchmark long seen as safe in global climate talks, could lead to an 80-foot rise in sea level. Quote, the dangerous level of global warming is less than what we thought a few years ago. That's James Hansen, director of NASA's Goddard Institute and one of the leading experts in this country on climate science. Quote, it was natural to think that a few degrees wasn't so bad, but a target of 2 degrees is actually, he says, a prescription for long-term disaster. News of the warm, ladies and gentlemen. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And now, let's hear the Christmas thoughts of Herman Cain. We'll hear them moments from now here on the show. And I do mean moments. I'll just be here pushing buttons, ladies and gentlemen, right until something else happens. But, you know, let's check weather, shall we? How's it looking out your way? This is the dead air portion of the program. Well, one of these days, something's going to happen. And I'll be very excited, and I'm sure you will be too. Please give to your local public radio station so that equipment like this works better in the future. And now, a Christmas message from Herman Cain.
Even if he's got a million elves, you know, Santa Claus needs a lot more selves. Flying all night all around the world. His carbon footprint gotta leave your hair curled. He's gotta be one busy man. But Herman thinks he's got a better plan. 999 Santas. 999 Santas, yo. Just like having 5 more Atlantas. 999 Santas. Those gifts have gotta be made and wrapped. That's a job that can leave him sapped. Then there's the flying and the chimney hopping. You think you got it bad with all that shopping. Some doppelgangers could ease the strain. He should ditch a sled and get on the train. 999 Santas. 999 Santas. 999 Santas. Save on the reindeer and the antlers. Just have 999 Santas. Now some will say, Herman, you're lost in a dream. Having more than one Santa is wild and extreme. Not Lots of folks dress up like him. That's a quirk. Genuine Santa still does all the work. But I'd never gotten to be CEO if Godfather Pizza had refused to grow. Come on now, 999 Santas. 999 Santas. Just like having five more Atlantas. That's what I'm talking about. 999 Santas.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, news from outside the bubble. And that machine is fire, by the way. From the Guardian newspaper in London, medical experts are calling for a review of the 50-year-old guidelines on prescribing antibiotics for children, warning that the rise in overweight and obese youngsters may mean that some kids get a less than adequate dose. So, whom does obesity benefit? Why, you'll have to buy more antibiotics, won't you? While they stress there is no evidence that children are suffering as a result of undertreatment, they say there should be better guidance than the rule of thumb that has applied for half a century. Doctors have worked on the principle that a big child is equal to half an adult, a small child equal to half a big child, and a baby equal to half a small child. They really did work this out on the thumb. The problem lies with the prescription of oral penicillin, such as amoxicillin, which is widely used against infections in children. The dosing guidelines are mainly based on age, and children's weight has increased over the decades since the mid-60s when the guidance was formalized. If children get less than the dose they need, there's a possibility their infection will not clear up easily. So just prescribe more antibiotics, won't you? And from BBC, banks stand to lose millions of dollars in debt repayments if the biggest municipal bankruptcy in American history is allowed to proceed. That's in Alabama. But the real victims of the financial collapse in Alabama's most populous county are its poorest residents, forced to bathe in bottled water and use portable toilets after being cut off from the water supply. There's widespread anger in Jefferson County, Alabama, that rising sewage rates could have been avoided but for the greed, corruption, and incompetence of local politicians, government officials, and Wall Street financiers. The community borrowed money in 2008 to finance the building of a repaired sewer system. And, they got caught with some rising fees that have required both the water and sewage rates to be combined, and the rates have increased 329% over the past 15 years, making it among the highest in the United States of America as the county struggles to service the mountain of debt it took on to pay for the new sewer system. Six of Jefferson County's former commissioners have been found guilty of corruption for accepting bribes from investment bank J.P. Morgan Securities and two of its former directors who were fined for offering bribes. So the bribes were offered and they were taken. Good deal for everybody concerned. J.P. Morgan, Chase, what matters? Yeah, they did. They sure did. The county's bondholders, who stand to lose about $4 million a month in repayments if the bankruptcy is allowed to proceed, are contesting it in court. The county's sewer rates prior to the bankruptcy had been scheduled to go up by a further 8% a year for the next 3 years in a deal with the county's creditors, i.e. J.P. Morgan Chase, to the dismay of local residents. Now that's likely to be 10% a year, or even, according to the court-appointed receiver, as much as 25%, just to get rid of your crap in Jefferson County, Alabama. You know what? Pack it up and send it to New York. A community activist in the deprived West End District of Birmingham said people in the city are reaching the breaking point. These people are going to end up rioting about this, she says. If they let this stuff happen, they're going to get the biggest riot the South has ever seen over the sewer business, unquote. She says soaring sewer rate bills have traditionally hit the poorest parts of the county hardest. Better off people in the suburbs install septic tanks. News from outside the bubble about what's going on inside the bubble. It is a copyrighted feature of our broadcast. And while we bid farewell to Iraq, we're still in Afghanistan. And that means it's holiday time there.
We swore in Karzai and we swore off Rabbani. For one day, maybe it's okay to be Afghani. The stockings are hung by the chimney with care. It's the only place to hang anything there. The gift has been given, the Taliban beaten. No reindeer will visit. They know they'll be eaten. Only Wayne Newton would come this far. 'Cause it's Christmas in Kandahar. We fought side by side with Uzbeki and Turka. We've shaved off the beard, thrown off the burqa. It's still a surprise when we look in the mirror and see standing behind us Geraldo Rivera. Santa's crossed off his list the land where we dwell. We've been naughty this year and Muslim as well. Drew Carey went by in an army car. Must be Christmas in Kandahar. We've mastered the problem of trimming the tree. We've covered it with a fine coat of explosive debris. There's no way to drive and no way to call. There's no stuff in the stores. There aren't any stores. And there isn't a mall. There's no Cathy Lee and no Charlie Brown. Just a couple of thousand Marines out on the town. Ramadan this year was strictly subpar. Now it's Christmas in Kandahar.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, in the irony, for the sake of irony department, the very week that the United States government began the preliminary hearing in the, by the way, about time, 19 months, in the case of Bradley Manning, the Army private accused of leaking 250,000 cables, as well as some videos, to the WikiLeaks organization, on trial that could have him serving a life prison sentence for, you know, leaking classified, crucial government secrets, although according to the AP, I think about 2 weeks ago, the government still is unable to say for sure that anybody, any of our friends abroad has been hurt by the, that is to say physically harmed, by as a consequence of the release of those cables. But still, serious secrets, you know, should be. So at the very same time, New York Times reported this week, from Baghdad, 400 pages of interrogations from a Marine Corps investigation into the massacre by Marines of Iraqi citizens in the town of Haditha in 2005. 400 pages of interrogations, once closely guarded as secrets of war, were supposed to have been destroyed as the Americans withdrew. Instead, they were discovered by the Times along with reams of other classified documents, including military maps showing helicopter routes and radar capabilities, radar by a reporter for the New York Times at a junkyard outside Baghdad. An attendant was burning them as fuel to cook a dinner of smoked carp. The documents, many marked secret, form part of the military's internal investigation and confirm much of what happened at Haditha, including a 76-year-old man being killed while in a wheelchair, women and children also being killed. Haditha became a defining moment of the war, helping cement an enduring Iraqi distrust of the United States and a resentment that not one Marine has been convicted for the massacre. And, of course, the resentment led to the Iraqi government insisting that if American troops were to stay, they would be required to be subject to Iraqi law, a condition that the United States found intolerable. But while the Times focuses on the content of the documents, I bring your attention merely to the irony that Bradley Manning is on trial for what somebody did by just throwing the stuff in the trash to be burned to cook a dinner of smoked carp, and then it's sitting there in the dump for anybody from the New York Times to come find. But those are, you know, those aren't as secret as there are levels, you see, of secret. And now,
he's not a general. He commands no troops. He's not an inspector. He peeks at no stoops. He's an inspector general.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Louisiana is among the worst states at enforcing federal clean air, clean water, and hazardous waste laws, and the Environmental Protection Agency should either force Louisiana and fellow laggards to do a better job or enforce the laws themselves, according to a report issued this week by EPA's Inspector General. The report does not spotlight specific environmental problems caused by Louisiana's lax regulatory regime, focusing instead on a broad failure to carry out required inspections and site violators. You know, like the United States government has done with regard to Wall Street. It concludes that the weak enforcement might be driven in part by, quote, a culture in which the state agency is expected to protect industry, unquote. Unlike, you know, the U.S. government with respect to Wall Street. Citizens groups have frequently targeted the state agency charged with enforcing federal environmental laws, Louisiana DEQ. One complaint against DEQ in 2001 triggered a comprehensive audit by the EPA, resulting in major changes in state enforcement. Even with those changes, Louisiana ranks so low compared with other states in the percentage of major facilities inspected, the number of violations, and the frequency with which the state issued a penalty that the Inspector General's office highlighted Louisiana in its new report. But the BP ad says it's good to come visit here. So, you know, who do you believe, the EPA or BP? News of the Inspector General, ladies and gentlemen. It's a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Just quickly, Cameron International, the maker of the Deepwater Horizon blowout generator, agreed to pay $250 million to BP under a legal settlement, BP says this week. Blowout preventers, which Cameron made, which are supposed to seal off an oil well in an emergency, must be redesigned to prevent failures like the one last year, according to the final report of a technical panel looking into the disaster. And up Canada way, Canada's energy regulator rolled out new rules for deep water drilling in the Arctic, saying there are alternatives to relief wells. Oil companies have asked for the removal of the relief well policy, asking for relief from relief wells. They also, the oil companies, tout new technologies to make blowouts much less likely, but none of the technology, according to PhysOrg, has proven to be fail-safe. Well, as long as it's proven to either fail or be safe, I say, you know, the odds are 50-50. News of the spill, ladies and gentlemen, for your listening pleasure. In case you're wondering what's going on with the Olympics, a top British official says the government has spent $1.26 million on tickets to entertain dignitaries, hey, and business leaders at next summer's Olympic Games. Thank you. I'll RSVP shortly. I wonder if the Kardashians are going. Oh, yeah. I thought it said celebrities. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week on most of these same stations, on the NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ. On the mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archive whenever you want it, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. Available as a free podcast from kcrw.com. And it would be just like your station being one of the most, if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you already? Thank you very much, uh-huh. A tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Hawaii, and Chicago desks. Thanks also to Jenny Lawson here at WWNO in New Orleans for help with today's broadcast. And thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. This broadcast is on Twitter at The Harry Shearer. Join the 51,000 followers. And go to thebiguneasy.com if you like for news on when and where you can see The Big Uneasy in digital form near you. And if you'd like to buy a CD player, give me a call after the show. The show comes to you from Century Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. Happy War on Christmas, everybody. See, covers both sides.